This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 17th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 370. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, the past and the future of BC's NDP government. First, on November 12th, British Columbia lost its 36th Premier, John Horgan, to cancer. On November 18th, the swearing-in of Premier David Eby's new post-election cabinet. On this edition, hear John Horgan's 2023 farewell speech to the legislature, and guest Alan Mullen joins me to fearlessly predict who is in and who is out of cabinet. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. John Horgan handed over power, the premiership, to David Eby on November 18th, 2022, almost 2 years ago. He stayed on the job for a few more months as the MLA from Langford, Juan de Fuca. It was a seat that he had held since 2005. He gave this farewell speech to the colleagues in the legislature on February 9th, 2023. This is courtesy of Hanser TV.
Thank you, colleagues. I thought that I would take the seat from the member for Columbia River Revelstoke, which is my first seat in this place. And as he well knows, the beauty of that seat is that the gallery can't really see you, and you're really close to the door. If you want to just bolt, you can do it. I know that the member for Abbotsford West is delighted with his location now as well. But it is, it's beyond an honor to be back here in the legislature. You may recall last fall, I was the Premier of British Columbia. It seems a thousand years ago to me that that was who I was, and now I'm back to being the spouse, caring spouse of Ellie, who, true to form, broke her leg 3 days after David, the premier, was sworn in. And so I went from making sure that the Navy was in good shape, the ferries were running on time, the buses were working, to making sure I was I had food for lunch. What are we having for dinner? Have you done the laundry? So I went from doing all of these lofty things to being a regular human being. And I thank Ellie for that as well, because it was so humanizing and such an opportunity to be in my community, talking to people again, not as someone who was in a position of power, but just another person waiting to get through the checkout line at the superstore, wondering what's gone on with the supply chains. Why can't we get icing sugar? What's going on? These were the things that people were talking about, and it was so great to be able to worry about those important things rather than all of the challenges that I've seen over my time in this legislature. I'll apologize to you now for taking you on a bit of a journey. Those who know me are aware that all of my remarks start with a journey. And I want to go back to grade one in Mrs. Foster's class, because my first speech in this house was from that chair over there, and it had to do with back to work legislation. The member for Prince George was the Minister of Education. The member for Abbotsford West, I think, was the Labour Minister, and I was a designated speaker, and I had to speak for 2 hours. I was daunted by that, 2 hours. Of course, now people know me, say, well, I can't say hello in 2 hours, but at that time, it was daunting, and I was speaking to venerable radio host Rafe Mayer that morning. And he said to me that, and I don't even remember the guy's name, but when Lincoln delivered his tremendous fourscore and whatever many years ago, there was another guy who spoke for 2 hours and no one remembers his name. And so Rafe reminded me that don't think too well of yourself, just get up and do your job and stop feeling sorry. And so I did that. But back to grade one, my first elected office on Valentine's Day, I was elected the King of Hearts with Laurie Hallier. It was tough. I had to do a lot of campaigning, but I pulled it off. I was in the cloakroom with two other guys. I don't remember who they were, but Laurie Hallier was the Queen of Hearts. The reason this is important, members, is because If you go into the hallway and look at the photo of the legislature that brought Dave Barrett to the premiership, and at that time the largest collection of New Democrats, in that photo are pictures of pages who were school kids who were brought here to make sure the water was filled. This was prior to the tasks that are now taken on by legislative staff. And the PAGE program was run out of Reynolds High School, which is my school. And so in grade eight, after the lofty victory in grade one, I was called to the office. Now, I was going down the wrong track in grade eight, and getting called to the office couldn't have been a good thing. It turned out that all the people who were called to the office were being called to be part of the PAGE program. And I bolted. I didn't show up, so I didn't get to be a page. But if you go and look at that photo, Lori Hallier, the Queen of Hearts in grade one, she's a page. King of Hearts, nowhere to be seen. But I could have been in this place far earlier than when I was elected in 2005. I could have been in this place far sooner than when I started working here in 1992. It was February of 1992 that I started working in this building, room 336. The health minister's office now. At that time, I was working for Dave Zernhelt. Caribou Dave, one of the greatest, nicest, kindest people you'll ever meet. You got to make sure he's having a sandwich every now and again. You got to make sure you're keeping an eye on Dave. But one of the greatest people, he and his family, and I know that the members from the Caribou know this full well. Dave and the Zernhelt family are literally an institution in the community. And I had the honor of getting my exposure to politics in British Columbia, even though I was born and raised here, working with Dave in this very building. And as time went by, I took increasingly larger roles and responsibilities, and at the end, I was the chief of staff to Dan Miller, who is not the shortest serving premier. He's the second shortest serving premier, but he's filled the gap between Premier Clark and Premier Dossange. And Dan, I was working in energy at that time, and Dan called me up and said, member, can I say, he said, Horgan, I can say that. I need you to come back and be my chief of staff. And I had just been in a meeting with all of the staff of the company I was working for, and we were going over the filing system, the ARCS and ORCS system. And there is nothing, members, more dull than being in a boardroom with no lights, looking at transparencies, and some of the elders here will know what those are. For the millennials, I'm sorry, you can Google that. Transparencies about the filing system. So I looked back at the door, and I had the phone up, and Dan was on the line, and I said, I'll be right there. And I said to the CEO, I can't do this anymore. I got to go do something else. And so I went to work for Dan, and that put, gratefully, a bullseye on my head. And therefore, when the government did change, my services were no longer required. And I was fine with that. I'm very much a Democrat, and I'm very, very comfortable with asking the public what their views are and then living with the consequences. But the consequences were the largest Liberal government in BC history. I call it an awkward interregnum, but that was the only four-year period that I was not a member or not working in this place over the past 30 years. So when I come back today and sit here with all of you, I can't do it without feeling that this is such a massive part of my life, Ellie's life, my boy's life. We went in, when I was working in the premier's office in the 90s, I had one of my kids came in with me because it was my day to take care of him, and he went through the cushions on the couch and he found $7. So the younger one, he comes home and says, can we go tomorrow? And I said, no, it doesn't work that way. We need to have captains of industry come in and empty their pockets into the couch before you can mine it for the riches that live there. But little stories like that are still part of the lore of our family, this place, this institution. Just this past summer, my oldest son and his delightful bride, Daisy, were getting married here in Victoria. They live in London now. They came here for a tour of the building. They got pictures taken out on the steps at the back, as many brides and grooms do. But it was summertime, and the doors were open, and I was in here talking to Daisy, a Brit, about our parliamentary institutions. And as we came out, a woman came up to me and said, how come you're in there? And I said, well, I work here. I said, And she looked at me. I had a pair of shorts on, and she said, yeah, you work here. Sure you do. I said, well, I work here. These are my kids. I'm the premier, so sorry, but I'm coming in here. But it's the only time in my however many years here, and I know that there's one scribe here that will remember this, I've tried always to just be part of the building. I've tried always to just be part of this extraordinary institution where people from different walks of life, different passions, different perspectives, come here proud as punch to represent their community. You may be radically right, you may be radically left, you may be radically middle of the road, but all of us came here with that one sense of, look at how this has turned out for me and my family. I get to represent my community, and I know every one of you is proud of that. And I want to tell you that I couldn't be prouder to look at all of you, the most diverse parliament in British Columbia history. I couldn't find a better time to make a speech than right now. All the women, all the people of color, LGBTQ, the diversity of British Columbia represented and reflected in us. What an awesome thing that is, but it's also an awesome responsibility. And on those times when we get heated, and I've on occasion found myself on occasion, Vaughn. One such time I'll share with you was when I was sitting in the member for Columbia River Revelstoke seat, and Colin Hanson was the finance minister. And I wanted to mention, yeah, well, you know that. You know that one, but oh, there you go. Well, and it involves Ellie, interestingly. Ellie was a small business person. These are not incongruities, Honorable Speaker, and reasonable people understand that. You can be a social democrat and still be an entrepreneur. You can do all of these things together. We are not separate component parts. We are amalgams of all that we do. Ellie was a business person, so, and those of you who have been on the Finance Committee, done your tour of duty there, you're trying to engage with witnesses. One of the witnesses said, oh, I really don't like the tax system. It's complicated. You got the HST or the GST or all of these T's. And I said, yeah, my wife really finds that difficult. Well, one of the staffers, I turn out that it's a member for White Rock, found this quote of me trying to get information from a witness using my spouse and her business as an example. Well, poor Colin Hanson gets up and says, well, your wife thinks we should change the tax system. And I lost my mind. I lost my mind because, first of all, she has nothing to do with debates in here. And second of all, Colin is such a nice guy. He's such a nice guy. And I've got a list of people, and I apologize for those who aren't on it. But Colin, Joan McIntyre, George Abbott, Olga Illich, Carol Taylor, Blair Lextrom, these are all people who had diametrically opposite views to me on many occasions. The member for Abbotsford West, and I'm going to stop there on current denizens, but it's about just trying to find the things we agree on, not always focusing on those tiny things we disagree on. And so poor Colin, I shot out of the seat, I was coming around, and I started, Colin would have been there in the finance minister's seat, and I thought, I'm not going to make it, because Lextrom was there, Rick Thorpe was there, a lot of big people. And so I thought better of my courageous, I'm going to go give Colin Hanson a piece of my mind. And I turned around, and that was the end of that. But the speaker at the day brought me in and said, I understand that you almost went on the government side. He said, I've got good friends over there. I've got good friends there. To his full credit, and for I will always remember this, Colin came to me and apologized. And that was the kind of guy he was. And that's the kind of relationship. And I know the member for Abbotsford West, the member for Port Coquitlam, who had been here before electricity, they know that you can have disagreements. They know you can have spirited debates. They know you can lift people in joy and shatter them in sorrow. But at the end of the day, you just got to say, it's all right, you know? It's an ordinary day, and that is why I'm so proud to be here. I've mentioned Liberals, so I get to turn that page, but I do it genuinely, and I'm grateful for the relationships that I've built with those who are here and those who have been here in the past. I also would be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about my friends on this side of the House. Some of us have been here for a long, long time. A member for Nanaimo North Cowichan, a member for Surrey, Wally, the member for Powell River, Sunshine Coast, Hillside, Kingsway, on and on. Those who were elected in 2005 and those who were here when there was when there were Tyrannosauruses roaming on the lawns. We've been through the worst of times in opposition and the best of times in government. And I'm hopeful that all of you who have been on both sides, even also those sitting currently in opposition, will reflect at the end of each day that no matter what role we have to play in this place, it's an important role. It's a vital role. And the people back home are depending on it. One of the things I got to do, not just as premier, but as MLA, is travel to every corner of this province. And I've been to almost every community imaginable. I've been to Tacla Landing, fantastic greeting there by Chief French and the Tacla people. Telegraph Creek, Atland, Lower Post, one of the most profound moments. Ellie and I both traveled to Lower Post to participate in the dismantling of the last vestiges of the residential school there. Very powerful. Argenta. No premier's ever been to Argenta. Picking weed, because it's legal. Picking weed, and for medicinal purposes, I believe. Caslow, I just dropped that. Williams Lake. And again, one of the highlights of my time was visiting Surplus Herbie's in Williams Lake. Yeah, there you go. I was with Carol James. I had just become leader of the official opposition. Carol was well known across the province. No one knew who I was. So Carol and I went on the road, and we were in Williams Lake. We had a couple of meetings, and opposition members will know it's tough to get a crowd when there's a wave happening, and the wave had happened, and Carol and I were looking for people who wanted to talk to us. And we had time on our hands. I'd broken my sunglasses. So Carol said, her spouse Al is a constant participant in the consuming experience at Surplus Herbie's. And so Carol said, I'm sure you'll find sunglasses there. Al finds everything there. So we go into Surplus Herbie's, and we're walking down the aisle, and this guy just shows up out of the blue, a little bit frazzled, and I took a step back, but Carol, resolute and confident, just smiled, and he started engaging with Carol, and so I thought, okay, this is my opportunity to go and get my sunglasses. So I walked away, and I'm looking around, and this guy comes up to me and he says, excuse me, and I turned to him, he said, I hear you're the leader of the opposition. I said, yes, I am, and he goes, what are the chances? I was just talking to the premier and now the leader of the opposition here in Surplus Herbie. What are the chances? So the story there, the lesson there is you wouldn't worry what people thought of you if you knew how seldomly they did. This guy has seen Carol on TV. Carol, Christie, what's the difference? You know, starts with a C, and I know both of them will debate that. But for this guy at Surplus Herbie's, as regular guys you're going to find anywhere, he just thought he'd hit the lottery on politicians. And if we were to ask him today what happened, he probably wouldn't remember. And I want you all to think about that, because this past few months, icing sugar has been the top of my agenda because of the supply chain challenges, apparently. And I'm going to have to talk to the agriculture minister about this, but I promised my constituents I'd get to the bottom of why we can't find icing sugar. And I think of Surplus Herbie's, I think of Argenta, I think of all of the places I've been, all the people I've seen. It sounds like a grad speech in that sense, you know, all the things you'll do, the people you'll see. But going back to being the King of Hearts and not being a page, and then being a staffer, and then being elected, and then being premier, and then just being the guy that sits back on the elevated dais over there, what an extraordinary opportunity. I am so fortunate to have had this opportunity. A regular guy, you probably know a bit about my background. My dad died when I was a baby, raised by my mom. She's no longer with us. There's so many people that are no longer with us. Kim Manson, my brother Pat, Jim Fulton, Ian Waddell, Margaret Mitchell, Jack Layton, Frank and Kay Mitchell, Richard Hughes, Diane Kennedy, Ann Paxton. These were people that were very deeply involved in this place, and they're no longer here. And I'm very sad about that, but that is also something that you need to all reflect on as you carry forward in your deliberations in this place and your work back home. In 2005, when I was elected here in the South Island, there was a clutch of us. David Coverley had been a Saanich councillor. Maureen Karajanis had been a Esquimalt councillor. the member for Swan Lake, Van Hillside, had been a Victoria counselor, and Carol James had been the chair of the school board for almost as long as Mike has been here. And then there was me, John. Sorry, table. And Joe Easingwood, who was the venerable, who's also passed, venerable talk show host here at CFAX, had all of us on, the rookies, he called us. And we would do this, and of course, for those who were seasoned politicians, they were, yeah, okay, this is fine. But Easingwood kept calling me back by myself because he knew I was easy to wind up. And if you're doing talk show work, if you've got someone who won't shut up, that's a good thing. So Joe would call me, and he'd bring me in, and then he'd push me with something, and then I'd go on, and the phone boards would light up, and you could just see his eyes go, oh, good, I like this guy. So I wasn't a former politician. I was this guy who seemed to connect with the audience at CFAX at that time, and I want to thank Joe and, of course, all of the media for all of the kindness they've shown me over the years. It was never my intention to do this. In fact, when I was growing up, I had the good fortune of being befriended by Bruce Hutcheson, though I know those up there will know Bruce Hutcheson. He was the editor emeritus of the Vancouver Sun when he passed away, but he was part of the press gallery here, I think, for 60-some years. And he was my mentor. What a lucky guy this organ is. He was my mentor, and I've uncovered a letter that he had written to the Carleton School of Journalism, beseeching them to allow me into the one-year program there. And, of course, I've later learned that there is a portrait the size of that wall of Bruce Hutcheson at the Carleton School of Journalism, but they still turned me down. And, boy, did I dodge a bullet there. You know, I mean, imagine if I had to become a journalist. Oh, horrifying, but I was this close. And cutting wood at the Hutcheson retreat at Shawnigan Lake, this was very important to Bruce, more important than kings and queens and prime ministers, and he had dined with all of them. The wood pile, making sure that it was appropriately stocked and you were ready for the winter, was something that was very important to Bruce, and he hired me to cut wood one summer when I was going to university. And I was, I'd maybe swung the axe 5 or 6 times, and he came out from the cabin and said, Horrigan, you're working too hard. Come in and we'll have a beer. And so I would then go in to the cabin on a speaker, and we would spend the rest of the day talking about John Oliver, Duff Patello, all of the people that had become part and parcel of my studies as a historian were part and parcel of Bruce's life. And I got a firsthand view of that right from the beer bottle in front of the old wood stove. And then, of course, I had to go back out and cut some more wood because we were all out. But again, I oftentimes pinch myself. How did I get so lucky? 63 years on the planet. I met Ellie the first day at university, and we've been smitten with each other ever since. I got the good fortune of being elected here. I've been able to move from that seat in the corner to this seat right here, and then over there, and then back here, just like that. I'm a lucky, lucky guy. I'm a lucky, lucky guy. I want to touch on a few other things, and I apologize for this, because I was planning to just respond to the speech from the throne. I didn't, I literally didn't expect to do this, but here I am. I wanted to touch briefly on the pandemic and on the natural disasters that we've all experienced, because I believe that it's not just all of the collaboration that happened here, and it was extraordinary. There was collaboration across the country. I know the Premier's just been with other Premiers and the Prime Minister trying to crack this nut of funding so that we can ensure that we're reimagining healthcare, publicly funded public healthcare for the generations to come. It's critically important. But we all came to this place from all sides of this house, from all parts of the country, different perspectives, through the pandemic, because none of us had any idea what we were supposed to do next, unless we collaborate. I spent countless hours with business, with labor, with members of this place. I know the health minister, Dr. Henry, Steve Brown, one of the most incredible public servants that I've ever come across, Dr. Penny Ballum, they pulled together an extraordinary response. And all of us, though we disagreed on nuance, we disagreed on substance, understood that the only way that we as a community and we as a country could get through an international catastrophe was if we worked together. And it was unprecedented in our history and unprecedented in my life, but it reaffirmed for me the importance of us always reaching across, always making sure that we do not close the door on collaboration. Even if we are heated about the particular point of view, we've got to make sure that we find that humanity. Which brings me to the last thing I want to talk about, which is I'm healthy. I don't have cancer. Sorry. Yeah. I should have said that at the outset. Oh, boy. I should have said that at the outset. Apologies for that. But I want to talk about the extraordinary people at the cancer agency. I want to talk about Dr. Pathak, who slit my throat. with a smile. He's a very nice man. Dr. Catter, who oriented the radiation. Dr. McCauley, who dealt with my first cancer, but was more interested, it seemed to me, in my second cancer. Sanjay, Preet, Deb, Sarah, Jordan, all of the people at the cancer agency who bolted my head down to the table every day for a month and a half and zapped me. The beard went away. It's starting to come back. And this is not Grecian. I want the record to show. The radiation shed some pounds and changed the color of my beard. So I'm happy about that. I feel younger already. But it was people like Tony from Salmon Arm. I've never met Tony. We've been corresponding back and forth. He was a month and a half. I've mentioned him in this place before. He was a month and a half ahead of me in treatment. And he and I kept an email relationship going, and we have since. I look forward to seeing him this summer up at Salmon Arm. Maybe you can get me a boat. and countless British Columbians. Ellie and I were inundated. There were literally binders of good wishes this high from people. And it's the humanity that cancer brings to us. The member for Mallardville knows this. The member from North Shore knows this. And others who have experienced cancer, either themselves or within their families, know that there's nothing more traumatizing than hearing those words. But once you normalize that and start acting like a human being, it's extraordinary, the collaboration. And that's what I took away from those sessions. I would go, and it's a workplace. You don't always agree with the people in your workplace. Is that fair? I'm not looking at anyone in particular, but sometimes you don't get along with everybody. It happens. But in the healthcare setting, healthcare workers, through the pandemic, through shortages, through all of the challenges, go to work every day and give the best care possible. And it is absolutely extraordinary. And I cannot thank those workers and British Columbians for how they responded to my personal tragedy. But when I look at how we all responded to floods, to fires, to pandemic, to heat domes, to the opioid crisis. These are unimaginable horrors for individuals and families, but yet we've all hung together. We've disagreed on how fast or how slow or how much or when, but we have never lost sight of working together to find solutions to these vexing problems. Climate change is not an ideological question. It is a question for every single human being on the planet. And if you haven't been paying attention, there are 8 billion of them now. 8 billion souls spinning around, not knowing where to go next, not knowing how fast to go. We will have those debates. We will be certain in our cause, but there is always uncertainty in everything that we do. Every day we get up and we make choices. Sometimes we make good choices. Sometimes we make bad choices. My mom, Alice, taught me at a very early age that the best you can do is all you can do. Do your level best, son, and everyone will be fine. And I have tried over 18 years in this place as an MLA, 30 years working here, 63 years drawing breath to try and make it better every day for the people around me. And I want to thank you all for allowing me to say today how important that has been for me, for my family, and for my community. I loved every minute of it, and I can't say any more than that inside the house. But thanks for everything, all of you. And I know there's people I didn't mention. I've got all these notes. I worked so hard on them, meticulously. I'm fastidious for staying to paper. Adrian, the health minister knows this. We've been friends since 1986, and there's not a word that's passed my lips that I haven't written down and passed on to someone else. So with that, I will just tantalize you with the water story. It's really funny, but I'm not going to tell it. Now they're shaking their head. Do not do the water story. Okay. So thanks, everybody. If you want the water story, it'll probably be on YouTube sometime in the future.
As a postscript, Horgan was a listener of this podcast and a reader of my work. He brought a unique passion to the job of being premier and an understanding of the working man and woman. He came from humble beginnings, an Irish-Canadian family that overcame tragedy. I'm one of many British Columbians who will miss the happy warrior. He did make mistakes, and we must not forget those, such as the 2021 decision to slap a $10 tax on freedom of information requests. That happened the year after the snap pandemic election, when Horgan broke the fixed election date law and ripped up the confidence and supply agreement with the Green Party. He will be a legend in political science textbooks and NDP history for leading his party to a 57-seat majority, but at what cost? More than 4,000 COVID-19 infections were reported during the election period. David Eby carries the torch today. He stuck to the fixed election date law in 2024. Let's hope Eby also ends the FOI tax. A John Horgan story? Well, at the end of a news conference in Vancouver's Canada Place on March 6, 2020, the pandemic was coming for all of us, and Horgan wanted his government to show it was ready. It was the Friday of the weekend of the annual Canada Sevens rugby tournament at BC Place. I asked Horgan if he was going to attend. He is a big rugby fan, after all, and he was there in 2019. He said during the news conference that he had party meetings that weekend. Later, when the news conference was over, he came back to the microphone, called for me by name, and assured me that he had tickets to the Women's Sevens tournament later that spring in Langford, in his riding. Ever the optimist, Horgan did not think the pandemic would shut down life as we knew it. Well, that didn't last for long. He had to make a very tough announcement on St. Patrick's Day that BC was in a state of emergency. And joining me on this edition is Alan Mullen, who is Chief of Staff to Darrell Plekis, when Darrell Plekis was the Speaker of the BC Legislature. Alan, you were able to see John Horgan at work in a way that most British Columbians didn't. What is his legacy? What will he be remembered for decades from now?
Well, yeah, I mean, first off, Bob, I mean, obviously our condolences to Ellie and his two sons. I mean, it's just devastating at 65 to lose somebody like John Horgan. You know, I always think about it and I say, you know, for somebody who didn't want the leadership of the NDP and somebody who certainly didn't want the you know, to become the premier of British Columbia, when he did become premier and you know, sort of when he sunk his teeth into that role, like the job was made for him. And he was obviously, you know, an incredibly popular premier, incredibly popular person. And to leave office more popular than when you got in is something that we rarely see in politics. And, you know, I mean, look, some of my best memories of John are him coming to the Speaker's office looking for cheesies. You know, John was literally John from Langford. You know, everybody says it. John would much rather ride the bus from Langford down to the legislature than have his RCMP detail escort him. That's just the guy he was. But one of my fondest memories were, you know, back when we, you know, the former Speaker Darrell Plekis and I were going through this legislative spending scandal, and, you know, we were getting beaten up on all sides, the media and the, you know, the Liberals of the day, etc. And the NDP being in government couldn't really, you know, comment on it or pass judgment one way or the other, and that was the appropriate thing to do. But, you know, it was a tough time, and I'll never forget it, John Horgan coming to my office and just telling me, look, I know it's tough. I know, you know, you're going through hard times right now, but you're Irish. And we don't buckle. And I'll just never forget the look in his face. And then when he got up, he said, then let's go grab a effing pint. And it was so reassuring, because here's the sort of the first minister. Here's the premier of the province saying, look, I can't say this publicly, but I'm behind you and what you're doing is the right thing. And it just gave me personal strength to sort of move forward. And it was just fantastic. And that was the guy. John was the guy, no matter what, for whatever was going on, he was the guy to help the person. So if you had a headache, John had the Tylenol. I was having a tough time at that particular moment in time. He recognized it and he was there for me. And John was there for everybody. There's a reason, he was called Premier Dad. Everybody loved him on all sides of the aisle, which you rarely, rarely see. He'll be missed. He'll certainly be missed by me, and I think he'll be missed by everybody involved in politics, but British Columbians, no matter what their political stripe. And again, heartfelt condolences to his wife Ellie and his two sons.
Now, when David Eby was sworn in the presence of John Horgan by the Lieutenant Governor Janet Austin, November 18th, 2022, David Eby's speech included a line where he said that he may look tall, but he's actually just standing on the shoulders of John Horgan. That was one of the comments that got the most applause on that day. And now here we are on the cusp of November 18th, 2024. The future of the NDP as the ruling party, the future of the British Columbia government, the new cabinet. Want to look at the first batch of cabinet posts? We're going alphabetical order, where we're assuming that the basic cabinet skeleton that existed before will be what we'll see going forward. The basics. Now, agriculture, that was Pam Alexis's portfolio before she got defeated in the election. I'm thinking that David Eby's going to look in the Okanagan. There were the was the problem back in the summer with the financial problems for BC Tree Fruits. There's a lot of questions about the Buy BC program, and Eby really does have to send a signal to the interior after really running a campaign that focused on Lower Mainland as well as Vancouver Island. So I'm thinking that he's going to go with Harwinder Sandhu, the Vernon Lumbee MLA, who's been reelected to take over the vacant spot in agriculture. What do you think?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, and you're right. When Pam Alexis was the Minister of Agriculture, there was issues, especially in the interior, in the fruit growing capital of Canada. My goodness. But I'm actually thinking that Eby might consider putting Lana Popham back in. Lana was incredibly popular and well liked in the agricultural community when she was Minister of Agriculture. She did a lot for the berry farmers in the Fraser Valley. She made frequent trips to the Okanagan and around the province, and she was incredibly well liked. And she was very, very good at that job and very, very good in that ministry. I would not be surprised to see David Eby put Lana back in to agriculture.
Now, I'm thinking that for Attorney General and Children and Family Development, that David Eby is going to stand pat. Nikki Sharma in Vancouver Hastings was the Attorney General before the election, and Grace Lohr in Victoria Beacon Hill in Children and Family Development. There was that photo op during the campaign when Chief Stuart Phillip from the Union of BC Indian Chiefs said that she has to stay in that role because he says that she's made some headway that other ministers previous have not. Do you agree with those?
I do indeed. Yeah, I think you're spot on there, Bob. I think that Nikki Sharma is a no-brainer for Attorney General. She's done a good job in her previous term in that role. She's a lawyer. She is Vancouver Hastings. It's a good role. It's a good fit for her, and I think David the Premier really likes her in that role. And I also agree, Grace Lohr is the perfect spot is Children and Family Development for her. And like you said, there's been lots of photo ops and lots of sort of promotion about her staying in that role. So I think, I think the Premier will obviously listen and look at that and say, yeah, we're going to keep those two the same. I think you're right.
Now, in citizen services, I'm reluctantly saying that EB is going to keep George Chow from Vancouver Fraserview in that role, even though George Chow is really in the twilight of his political career, and is someone also who has drawn attention because of his friendly connections to the Chinese consulate and the various United Front groups that support the Chinese consulate and the Chinese Communist Party in Vancouver. There are questions about how George Chao was handling the cybersecurity problem, the hacking that happened earlier this year. We still don't have a full accounting of exactly what happened, but he was the minister who really wasn't there for the news conferences that were really handled by Mike Farnworth, Solicitor General, and by David Eby. But yeah, it is a ministry that it really is run by staff. It includes the cybersecurity function, includes the government's procurement function. Do you think that George Chao could stay in that role, or is there someone else that could fill in, could jump into that role and take over from George Chao?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think George Chao probably won't stay in that role. I'm not even sure if he'll stay in cabinet, if I'm being perfectly honest, for the reasons that you just stated. Citizen services is not the type of ministry that you want somebody that's sort of complicated or that's going to bring sort of negative attention. We saw that under John Horgan's government with Ginny Sinns, and that didn't end well. And she had to be removed from that ministry and ultimately removed from cabinet. I'm thinking Jagru Brar, the member for Surrey Fleetwood, would be a good fit in citizen services. I think the ministry would suit him and it would suit his talents. So my bet would be on Jagru to be appointed Minister of Citizen Services.
Now, education is vacant because of Rachna Singh's defeat in Surrey and Surrey Green Timbers. I'm thinking that Nina Krieger, who won in Victoria Swan Lake, she took over from Rob Fleming in that riding, that Nina Krieger would be someone who would go into education. She has a background, actually, as a Holocaust Memorial Museum manager, someone who the NDP went to because, of course, after the Selena Robinson departure, the firing by David Eby, really, over that whole awful episode where Selena Robinson later said that she was the victim of internal anti-Semitism in the caucus. We know why Nina Krieger was recruited to run for the NDP. And I'm thinking that because of that, partly because of that, that she would be an ideal person to enter into the education portfolio.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you're spot on exactly what you said. I'm with you on Nina being appointed Minister of Education. I think she would also have a fairly steady hand when dealing with the teachers union, which is sort of the biggest challenge if you're going to be Minister of Education. So I think my money's on Nina, same as yours, Paul.
And Rob Fleming, of course, he retired as the Minister of Transportation, but he was previously a Minister of Education. And another incumbent in North Vancouver, Lonsdale, very popular in the NDP, in the NDP caucus, Bowen Ma, who was the Emergency Management Minister. I'm thinking that she'll stay as the Emergency Management Minister, but you've got a different idea.
I do. Yeah, I think Bowen's going to be. She's going to remain in cabinet, in my view. I think she's going to be in a different portfolio, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. I think Terry Young, the newly elected member, former Vancouver police officer, I think he is a good fit for emergency management. The reason I say that, and I'll talk about who my pick is for Solicitor General a little bit later, but I think the Minister of Emergency Management needs to be a good complementary, sort of figure to the Solicitor General, Minister of Public Safety. I think that would be great for Terry because he's a new member, but he's got a lot of experience in emergency management, crisis management, that kind of stuff in his previous role. I think Terry is a very good spot for emergency management, and I think the premier might put him there.
Now, 2025 is going to be a big year for the Energy Ministry, the ministry that is responsible for BC Hydro. This will be the year of cutting the ribbon at Site C, the biggest infrastructure project in British Columbia history. As we're talking, Site C is coming online. One of the generators is online. The reservoir is full. It's on its way to being fully in service. And so it'll be important for a minister to be involved in that. And I'm thinking continuity. Josie Osborne from Mid-Island Pacific Rim, that she'll stay in the portfolio. What do you say?
Well, I was actually thinking Ravi Kalon from Delta. Ravi has been Minister of Housing in this previous government. I think Ravi needs to sort of move on from the housing portfolio, in my view. And I think this could be a good one. I think with the Site C, like you say, the ribbon cutting, Ravi is polished. He's well spoken. I think there's some other sort of conflicts that have arisen through his tenure as Minister of Housing. And I think it's, in my view, it's time that the Premier sort of moves him. I'm not saying move him out of cabinet. He's very valuable in cabinet. But I think energy is a good landing spot for him.
Yeah, you do raise a good point there because of what the Conservatives focused on during the election campaign. Ravi Kalon's sister is with a company, a new lobbying company, government relations company, and his brother is a developer over on Vancouver Island. So that might be a little too close for comfort. I'm sure the Conservatives will want to carry on their prosecution of him in the legislature in question period if he stays in that portfolio. But if he was shuffled over to energy, that would solve that. The next in line is environment. Now, George Heymann retired, and George Heymann was also the MLA for Little Mountain. And Christine Boyle was his successor. She won that riding. She was really the voice of the environment for the One City Party, an ally of the Green Party Canada, the Green Party councillors on Vancouver City Council. And I'm thinking that she might be slotted into environment. It would be a bit of a controversial move, mainly because of mainly because of her family. I mean, she's married into the Klein and Lewis clan, people who are heavily invested in anti oil, anti gas, anti development, decarbonization. And if Christine Boyle became the Minister of Environment, how much clout would she have at the cabinet table? She would definitely please the Greens within the caucus, the environmental movement within the caucus, but she might be a little bit controversial. But I'm thinking that David Eby might go there anyways and appoint her as the Environment Minister.
Yeah, I actually think you're right. I think it probably would be controversial. I think there's going to be a lot of sort of appointments that may be a little bit more controversial. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it would be very pleasing to the Greens. Even though the NDP have a majority, it's a razor thin majority. And David Eby has said very recently that he's been having very good discussions with the Greens. You don't necessarily need them to sign a confidence and supply agreement, but you do need to keep them on side. And obviously you don't want the speaker sort of breaking ties if at all avoidable. So you want to please them. And I think that environment portfolio is very obviously very important to the Greens. And I think they'd be quite pleased with Christine Boyle. So I think it makes sense. Politically, it makes sense. So I agree with you. I think that's probably where she'll land.
And here we go to another segment looking at finance, the F through the M's. Finance, Minister of Finance, Katrine Conroy, of course, retired with that role. I'm thinking that this could be the first big inner circle move by David Eby in this cabinet, taking Adrian Dix out of health, which is the biggest, the most expensive ministry, and put Adrian Dix into finance. Adrian Dix, of course, a longtime MLA, a past leader of the NDP, longtime health minister. There has been a lot of controversy in the health ministry for a variety of reasons coming out of the pandemic, for the problems that we've seen in hospitals, long wait times in emergency rooms, some hospitals actually having to close because of a lack of doctors and nurses. That situation doesn't look like it's going to solve itself anytime soon. But David Eby will need someone strong and someone experienced, someone with credibility that he can put into the finance role. And I'm thinking that would be Adrian Dix.
Yeah, it's an interesting pick. I disagree. I think finance, there's a very good possibility that Mike Farnworth will be appointed Minister of Finance. Now, if I had my choice, I think I would love to see Mike Farnworth as Speaker. It's the only thing, and I've actually had the opportunity to speak to Mike about this literally just a couple of weeks ago. It's the only thing he hasn't done. He's been there, he's done it all. And I think, he understands parliamentary procedure. I'd love to see him in the speaker role, but I think it can be agreed that I don't think the premier has much of an appetite to put somebody like Mike Farnworth in the speaker role because of his experience. He's very valuable at the cabinet table. He's very valuable on the front bench. But do you leave him in Solgen, public safety? I say no. Well, where does he land? To me, the most reasonable sort of option would be finance. I think Mike Farnworth will be Minister of Finance.
And Forests was a portfolio that Bruce Ralston in Surrey held for many years. And there was Gary Begg in Surrey Guildford, who won by razor-sharp margin, 22 votes on the judicial recount. They called him the comeback kid. It looked like he would not be returning to Victoria, but that 22 votes in the judicial recount meant that the NDP solidified its 47 seats. It means they got that 1 seat margin of the majority. And Gary Begg has been the whip for many years since the early days of the Horgan administration. And he's making a good case to be a cabinet minister. And I'm thinking that that could be Forests. There needs to be a strong cabinet minister in the Forest Ministry because of the challenges that that industry faces in British Columbia, environmentally, business-wise, and of course, with negotiations with the Americans over softwood lumber, which never seemed to come to a fruition, come to satisfaction for British Columbia. I'm thinking that David Eby is going to slot Gary Begg in as the Minister of Forests.
I agree with you. I think Gary Begg has definitely earned a spot in cabinet. He's been an incredibly good whip. I would obviously worked with him when I was at the legislature, and then he's been whip ever since he got elected in 2017. I'll talk more about Gary later because I do think he'll be in cabinet, but I don't think it's going to be in Forests. Forests for me, Josie Osborne, and I agree with you that you need somebody that is strong, you need somebody that's experienced, and you need somebody that I think, can really tackle the sort of the big issues. Josie has been Minister of Energy. To me, it's a good slide for her to go over to Forests, and I think she'd do a great job there. And I think the Premier will take a good long hard look at that portfolio, and I think that's where Josie lands.
Now, health, I already mentioned that my prediction is Adrian Dix gets shuffled into finance. And my prediction is that his replacement in health will be Jennifer Whiteside, who has been the Minister of Mental Health and Addictions, which is kind of an add-on to the Ministry of Health. She has a background in health labor unions, working for various health labor unions. So I'm thinking that that could be a convenient substitute for health, maybe Jennifer Whiteside. What do you think?
I think Adrian Dix stays where he is. I think that's one of the few ministries that's, obviously we spoke about Attorney General and Children and Family Development. I think health stays the same because I think Adrian has done a reasonable enough job through the pandemic to warrant the Premier going to him and saying, if you want to stay there, I'll leave you there. If you don't, I'll shuffle you out. And I think, and I don't know, but I think if that question was put to Adrian Dix, I think he would say, I would rather stay in health and, sort of continue what, down the path that I'm going, and Dr. Bonnie Henry, and he has the wheels are running with Adrian in that ministry. So unless he wants out, I can't see the Premier taking him out. And, my view of it is I don't think he wants out. So I think Adrian Dix stays in health.
Now, housing, that's Ravi Kelan's ministry, the Delta North veteran MLA. And you mentioned that maybe Bowen Ma could be a It could be the new housing minister because of those conflicts. I tend to agree with you on that. Indigenous relations. Tamara Davidson from Haida Gwaii is a First Nations MLA, a rookie MLA. I was thinking that she might be a logical choice for David Eby. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, it could be logical, but it, sort of in my experience, generally, you don't really, for whatever reason, they don't tend to put Indigenous men or women into Minister of Indigenous Relations, much like you don't put a doctor as Minister of Health, you don't put a teacher as Minister of Education, usually you don't put a cop or an ex-cop as Solicitor General. So with that in mind, I get why you're saying Tamara Davidson, but to me, the member from Nanaimo, Sheila Malcolmson, she's got experience at the federal level. She was an NDP MP. She's got a couple of terms under her belt now. She's taken on a couple of portfolios, most recently mental health and addictions. So to me, that would probably be a good fit. She's got good connections in the community, Vancouver Island, as well as the mainland, as minister. I think Sheila Malcolmson could very well be the Minister of Indigenous Relations.
Okay, now jobs, economic development, that's Brenda Bailey's portfolio. She moved from False Creek to Vancouver South Granville and got reelected. I'm thinking that she'll stay in that portfolio. What do you think, Alan?
Well, I'm thinking Harvinder Sandhu for that portfolio for sort of the same reasons that you were suggesting her for agriculture. I think jobs economic development is a really good ministry for somebody who's very strong, but it's also sort of their first time in cabinet and sort of first time in office. I think Harwinder would bring a lot to the table given her location and also her previous experience. So I'm thinking Harwinder will land in jobs economic development.
Now, Labour is also vacant after the retirement of Harry Baines, and I'm thinking that George Anderson, the Nanaimo-Lanceville rookie MLA, who's not a rookie in politics, has a background in Nanaimo City Council and is a lawyer. And I'm thinking also that Nanaimo-Lanceville would be strategic. Nanaimo is one of the hubs, a hub city, but also a hub of the Labour movement historically in British Columbia. For many, many decades, and I'm thinking that maybe George Anderson would be put into the labor portfolio.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. My prediction would probably be Brenda Bailey. And, for the very similar reasons you're thinking sort of Brenda would be perhaps better suited to jobs economic development. To me, Labour is a really good spot for Brenda to land. I think, the former Minister of Labour, Harry Baines, has put in a lot of sort of groundwork, and I think Brenda is very well positioned to continue that work. So I think the Premier will probably see that, and I think Brenda will probably land in Labour.
Now, mental health and addictions, if my prediction comes true that Jennifer Whiteside moves to health, that would then open up a vacancy right there. And I'm thinking that if that were to happen, Jody Wickens from Coquitlam Burke Mountain, who made a comeback to the NDP, she made a case for herself to be put into cabinet. She comes from a background of NGOs involved in autism. And I'm thinking that Jody Wickens could be the next mental health and addictions minister. What do you think?
I'm actually leaning towards Randine Neal. Randine is very seasoned when it comes to sort of serious community issues. Obviously, she's former media, but she's very well connected in the community. But she's really what I've seen over the years with Randine. She really has her finger on the pulse when it comes to those sort of very deep-rooted community issues. And mental health and addictions is obviously a very deep-rooted community issue that's affecting every part of this province. I think she brings a certain skill and ability and sort of a leadership quality that I think we need in mental health and addictions. And I think the Premier probably sees that. I think Randine Neal in that ministry.
Now, municipal affairs, that's Anne Kang from Burnaby Centre. Will she stay in that portfolio? I think she might.
Yeah, she very well might, but I would probably say Tamara Davidson. for municipal affairs. Again, if you want to sort of be Minister of Municipal Affairs, you have to have good connections with a lot of the municipalities. I think Tamara Davidson has that. I think, you have to start putting in some of these sort of rookie members into cabinet because obviously you don't have enough incumbents. I think Tamara would be very good in municipal affairs. So I think that's probably where she'll land.
Post-secondary education before the election, that was Lisa Baer, Maple Ridge Pitt Meadows. She got reelected. I think she might stay there.
Yeah, I mean, again, she did a good job there. But if I'm moving Ann Kang from municipal affairs, I think a good landing spot then for Ann Kang would be post-secondary education. I think she has, got enough experience now as a minister to take on that post-secondary education portfolio. Used to be advanced education. So I think Ann Kang will probably slide in there, and Lisa Baer will slide into a different ministry.
And that opens up Solicitor General. Next is Solicitor General, and Mike Farnworth, Solicitor General for many years. I'm thinking that he's going to leave that ministry just because it was a hot potato in Surrey, and Surrey was where the NDP almost lost the election, basically. And I think that there will be a new Solicitor General. I'm leaning towards Terry Young, the former Vancouver Police Department senior officer. Of course, there's questions about Terry Young and his work that he did at the Justice Institute in training officers, police officers from the People's Republic of China. Some questions about that. But he won in Yale Town. It was a tough race against Melissa Dejanova from the Conservatives. And his wife, of course, is Sarah Kirby Young, an ABC councillor with Vancouver City Council. So I'm thinking that David Eby is going to put Terry Young in as Solicitor General.
Yeah, and obviously, I said earlier on that I think Terry Young would be sort of better suited to emergency management. I think there is nobody in that caucus better suited to a Solicitor General, Minister of Public Safety than Gary Begg. And the reason I say that is, like Terry Young, Gary's obviously a former police officer, he's a former inspector with the RCMP. The difference is, Gary has experience in government. Gary has been the whip for, 7 years. And he's actually done a really good job at being the whip. The other thing too is, and I agree with you, Bob, that Mike Farnworth will be moved out of there. That whole Surrey, police service, RCMP transition, that was a debacle. And I think the minister took it sort of personally, as did the mayor. And I think, they need somebody to bridge that gap, right? They need to start building the bridges back with not only the mayor and council of Surrey, but the people of Surrey. And I think that's a big part of why they lost a lot of ground in Surrey. And I've actually had the opportunity to talk to Gary Begg a number of times about, not just policing, but corrections or public safety or provincial police force or all these different types of things, which leads me to think, and I think the Premier will see it as well, there is nobody better suited to be Solicitor General of the province than Gary Begg. And I think that's where he will land.
So next up is social development. Sheila Malcolmson from Nanaimo Gabriel Island has been the minister there, and I'm thinking that she'll continue to be that minister. What's your prediction?
I'm thinking Lisa Baer. I think social development would be a good transition for Lisa from post-secondary education. If I'm moving Ann Kang over there, then I got to move Lisa somewhere else. So I think social development would be a good spot for Lisa Baer, and I think that's where she'll land.
And tourism, Lana Popham, tourism, sports, culture. Lana Popham has been the minister there, the veteran Saanich South MLA. I'm thinking because the Invictus Games are coming up in the new year, and then in 2026, the FIFA World Cup is coming to BC Place Stadium, that they'll want to have some continuity there, that Lana Popham will stay as the tourism minister.
Well, I strongly think that the Premier will move Lana back over to agriculture. And who I'm thinking for tourism is Spencer Chandler Herbert. Spencer has been an elected member for many years. He's done multiple terms. Most recently, he served as deputy speaker. I do know that Spencer would ultimately like to become speaker. But I think he's got some more terms left in him. And I think, you know, it's time for Spencer to have a seat at the table. And I think he would be very successful. And I think he'd be very good in a portfolio like tourism. I think that's where he'll land.
And transportation, that's open because of the retirement of Rob Fleming. That's a big ticket, a big controversy portfolio, a lot of moving parts. Pardon the pun, but transportation is such a big role in British Columbia, especially after the promises that David Eby made about expanding the highways into the Fraser Valley. You've got a lot of projects, transportation projects, bridges, highways. SkyTrain that are late over budget. It's a hot potato ministry. And someone like Mike Farnworth would be someone who could take charge there. I think that transportation would be handed over to Mike Farnworth.
Well, see, as I think Mike is going to, excuse me, land in finance, I'm thinking Jennifer Whiteside. You know, she's had a seat at the table as Minister of Mental Health and Addictions. I think it's it. I think she's ready, and I think she is well positioned to sort of take over that portfolio of transportation from Rob Fleming. Like you said, there's a lot of issues. There's a lot of big projects coming, and you're going to need a sound minister to be able to navigate it, but also to be able to communicate what's going on with the various projects, etc. And I think Jennifer Whiteside is that person. I think she's going to land in transportation.
Now, Nathan Cullen spent just one term in provincial politics after coming back from Ottawa, and he was defeated in the election. He was the Minister of Water, Land, and Resource Stewardship. That's some people called it Walrus for short. It's the ministry formerly known as Land and Water Resource Stewardship Land Wars. It's had some different names over the years, different business cards, and you'll have a new minister there. And I'm thinking that new minister would be Randy Neal. That's where I think Randy Neal, the former broadcaster who won on the Sunshine Coast, will go. Who do you think will go there?
I'm thinking George Anderson. I think George Anderson is a little bit better positioned to take that over. Again, there's lots going on in that ministry, and there always is. We didn't really hear from Nathan Cullen all that much in the grand scheme of things when he was minister, but I think that ministry is going to start sort of, for lack of a better term, heating up in sort of the coming year or years. And George Anderson is a lawyer. I think he's incredibly well spoken. And I think that's a ministry that he could really sink his teeth into. I think George Anderson lands there.
Okay, and then that's it for the ministry. There is a very important other position that is necessary for the operations of the legislature, operations of the parliament buildings, and that being the speaker. Now, Raj Chauhan was the speaker who succeeded Darrell Plekis after the 2020 election. And who do you think will be the speaker going forward as we go forward into the next session of the legislature, the 43rd Parliament of British Columbia?
Well, I know that the Premier was hoping he could, snag a Conservative to fill the Speaker's chair. I don't think that's going to happen. I just any of the sort of the front runners in my mind have already categorically said no, not going to do it. Go away. Don't ask me again. I think probably Raj Chauhan stays. He's been the Speaker, since Darrell Plekis vacated. He's done a reasonable job. He's fine as speaker. And the issue being, I know that Mike Farnworth wouldn't be opposed to it. I know Spencer would definitely like it, but you always have to look at, well, where are the people best suited? And I know Raj has made it very clear he would like to be speaker again. I think it's a comfortable fit. And I think the Premier just says, okay, Raj, you're going to continue as speaker. I think Raj Chauhan continues.
There we go. There we've got our predictions for the next version of cabinet, British Columbia's cabinet under Premier David Eby. It'll be announced, and the swearing in will be November 18th. Alan Mullen, former chief of staff to former speaker of the legislature Darrell Plekis, who was the speaker from 2017 to 2020.
Pleasure is always to be with you.
Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taipei 101 exhibits Shohei Ohtani's 50-50 baseball. Baseball commemorating 50 home runs and 50 steals by Japanese slugger now on view to the public. The baseball became the most expensive ball in sports history at an auction on October 23rd in the U.S., fetching a record $4.4 million. The ball was purchased by Taiwanese private investment firm UC Capital, which is based in the Taipei 101 building. The ball is part of a larger Dreams Fly High exhibition taking place on the 89th floor of the skyscraper until March 2nd. In ABC News Australia, social media duty of care laws would force online giants to take preventive action on mental health harms. The Australian federal government has committed to legislating the model, which was recommended as part of a broader independent review of the Online Safety Act. The Albanese government is considering the broader recommendations of the review as it seeks to place the onus on digital platforms to ensure users are safe from harm. In Kyoto News, 7&i mulls management buyout to fend off Canadian takeover bid. The suggestion that will take the Japanese operator of the 7-Eleven convenience store chain private is a fresh development in the takeover battle with Couche-Tard Incorporated of Quebec, whose latest offer has been estimated to be worth around $45 billion. The potential management buyout proposed by 7&i Vice President Junro Ito is likely to exceed $38.7 billion and could be the largest ever in Japan. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, after decades of growth, Oregon's population is shrinking. A top economist examines why. Quote, Oregon households are moving to places like Idaho or rural Washington or Texas, says Mark McMullen. These are lower cost areas, end quote. McMullen's new research focuses on a different phenomenon, the dwindling of Oregon's in-migration, which over the past couple of years resulted in a small but significant population loss. In Cascadia Daily News, elected commissioners will convene in January to review Whatcom County Charter. Group of 15 will review how the county is governed, elected officials' powers, and how elections work. Whatcom is one of only 7 counties in the state that operate under Home Rule Charter. The charter is essentially a local constitution. Once a decade, an elected group of citizens takes a year to review essential elements of how the county is governed, such as what powers elected officials hold, how citizens are represented, and how elections work. And in the Breaker.News, these headlines. More questions than answers after Canada Soccer releases sanitized summary of drone spying report. And neighbors of South Vancouver Park frustrated by FIFA 26 secrecy. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to everyone in BC who is fighting cancer, the patients and their loved ones, the doctors, the nurses, and the scientific researchers, the people who are raising money to help find a cure. As BC mourns the loss of ex-Premier John Horgan, keep all of those people in your mind and in your heart. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 17th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 17th of November in 1973, at a meeting in Orlando, Florida, President Richard Nixon told AP editors, quote, I am not a crook, end quote. And on the 17th of November in 2003, Arnold Schwarzenegger began his term as California governor. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.